Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu returned to the Golden State yesterday to lobby for a clean energy revolution before a packed auditorium at Stanford University.
America has an opportunity to seize the day and to lead in what has to be a new industrial revolution to use the energy as efficiently as we can, the energy we have, and to develop sources of cleaner energy. It's our choice. Do we want to be leaders or followers?
The Nobel Prize winner and former director of the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory said Congress needs to pass an energy bill that will signal the private sector clean energy can be profitable. California's landmark greenhouse gas reduction law could cost jobs in the near term. That's the opinion of the state legislature's nonpartisan analyst released yesterday. AB 32 requires the state reduce its greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by 2020. The State Air Resources Board has estimated the push towards cleaner air will generate 120,000 new jobs by 2022. But the analyst says, quote, there is generally not a simple relationship between policy changes and jobs per se. State Senator Dave Cogdill of Modesto asked for the report. He called on the governor to stall the law. But as the Sacramento Bee notes today, the governor considers AB 32 a key element of what he hopes will be his green legacy. It's not just the state that's setting greenhouse gas reduction benchmarks. L.A. Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports on how the biggest city in the state is faring with its push to clear the air.
3 years ago, Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa pledged to generate 20% of LA's power with renewable energy by the end of 2010. It sounded great then, but now, with 10 months to go, the mayor's not sure it'll happen. So his advisors are shopping around an idea to add an extra fee to electricity bills that'll help reach this milestone.
This is necessary to reach it, to maintain, and to reach beyond.
Sean Clegg is a former deputy mayor. These days, he's a consultant. The mayor hired him to gauge public support for a $2.50 monthly carbon surcharge. He conducted a poll. He discovered 64% of likely voters thought the fee was a good idea. He sees it as a thumbs up for investment in big renewable energy projects like geothermal plants, wind farms, and solar projects.
The sun comes up every morning and goes down every night, and it's free. But the cost of creating large-scale either in-basin rooftop solar or large-scale, you know, what they call solar farms, it's extremely capital-intensive.
But it's not like the city has a long way to go. Los Angeles now depends on renewable energy for 19% of its power supply, just one percentage point away from the mayor's goal. Clegg admits there's something else going on here. In Villaraigosa's rush to make green promises, he's carved out a 40% renewable plan for the city by 2020, and he's also pledged the city will end its reliance on coal by the same year. This surcharge, says Clegg, is equally suited to these goals. Rhonda Mills works for the Clean Power Campaign, a renewable industry trade organization. She says the surcharge is a good idea, but she's not sure the Department of Water and Power will spend it wisely.
I think the goal of the mayor is to have it go to pay for renewables, but I don't see a plan at the utility that achieves it.
LA still depends on coal for almost half its power. Mills claims the DWP has done little to wean itself from it. Instead, she says, the DWP seems to be going backwards. The department recently decided to shelve its plan for Green Path North, a transmission corridor that would have carried geothermal and solar energy from the desert. Mills calls the DWP's approach to clean energy fossilized.
It's fossilized in the kind of electricity that it generates and sends to LA. It's fossilized in how it budgets and strategizes its electricity future. And it's fossilized in how it communicates with its ratepayers about what it's doing.
A spokeswoman for the DWP declined to comment for this story. LA's city council will likely vote on a carbon surcharge by April. But even there, skepticism about the fee runs high. Councilwoman Jan Perry says it'll be hard to explain why the city is scaling back on services while asking DWP customers for more money. For the California Report, I'm Rob Schmitz in Los Angeles.
Federal prosecutors charged a Laguna Niguel man yesterday with operating a ring of test takers who helped about 120 Middle Eastern citizens obtain and maintain U.S. student visas by passing exams for them. Prosecutors allege students paid up to $1,500 for course assignments and finals, about $1,000 for English and writing proficiency exams. 46-year-old Eamon Daniel Higgins pleaded not guilty in U.S. District Court in Santa Ana to a charge of conspiracy to commit visa fraud. The special agent in charge of the investigation told the L.A. Times Higgins never went to college, at least not to get a degree for himself. Some local school officials are taking issue with the state's preliminary list of lowest-performing schools released yesterday. Some of the schools on the list come as no surprise, but others do. Mina Kim has more.
188 schools were deemed California's persistently lowest achieving yesterday. Among the listed schools were two middle schools from San Jose Unified School District. But Superintendent Don Iglesias says he questions whether education officials accurately calculated the bottom 5% of schools.
Because the list they came out with, that's not who's on it. To give you an example, I was planning on one of our schools being on the list because clearly, they are in the lowest 5%. Instead, I have two schools that are nowhere near the bottom.
Schools on the list must close down or adopt major reforms, including replacing principals and teachers or converting to charter schools. The schools are eligible for federal grants of up to $2 million to help implement the changes in fall 2010. Iglesias says he's done reforms like these before, and that's not enough time.
We planned for a year, and we involved heavily the parents and the community around what that would look like, you know, from their perspective, so that they would have a voice and buy-in and commitment around it. It took some time.
Iglesias and other district officials around the state also expressed concern over the lack of clarity about how schools can get off the list. California must compile the list of failing schools to comply with federal stimulus funding requirements. The State Board of Education is reviewing the list, which will be finalized Thursday. For the California Report, I'm Mina Kim.
For a look at the list, head to our website, californiareport.org. That's the California Report for Tuesday, March 9th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California, and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. The California Endowment, working to build healthier communities that support children, youth, and families. Online at www.calendow.org. And Chevron, an energy company encouraging innovation right here in California. This is the power of human energy. Information available at chevroncalifornia.com.